Going to be reading this morning from the book of Luke, chapter 2, verses 41 through 52. Now every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up as usual for the festival. When the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. But his parents did not know it. Assuming that he was in the group of travelers, they went on a day's journey. Then they started to look for him among their relatives and friends, and when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him there, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." He said to them, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. His mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in years and in divine and human favor. We're going to talk about the Christian family this morning. Most of us, I'm sure, would agree that raising a family can be challenging. In fact, raising a family changes with each child that's born. Someone at one time had made a list of ways having a second and third child is different from having your first. So kind of see if you can identify with any of these things. For example, if you are a mom, your clothes change. With the first baby, you begin wearing maternity clothes as soon as the gynecologist confirms you're pregnant. With the second baby, your regular clothes for as long as possible. With your third baby, your maternity clothes are your regular clothes. And your attitude towards germs changes. With the first baby, if the pacifier falls on the floor, you put it away until you can go home and wash and boil it. With the second baby, when the pacifier falls on the floor, you squirt it off with some juice from the baby's bottle. With the third baby, you wipe it off on your shirt and pop it back in. Your attitude towards going out changes. With the first baby, the first time you leave your baby with a sitter, you call home 5 times. With the second baby, just before you walk out the door, you remember to leave a number where you can be reached. With the third baby, you leave instructions for the sitter to only call if she sees blood. Your attitude towards being with the baby changes. With the first baby, you spend a good bit of every day just gazing at the baby. With the second baby, you spend every bit of each day watching to be sure the older child isn't squeezing, poking, or hitting the baby. With the third baby, you spend a little bit of time every day hiding from your children. Your attitude towards swallowing coins changes. When the first child swallows a coin, you rush the child to the hospital and demand x-rays. When a second child swallows a coin, you carefully watch for the coin to pass. When the third child swallows a coin, you deduct it from his allowance. Families can be very challenging. And as parents, we go through lots of different things, lots of emotions, lots of funny events, sad events, different things that happen in our lives. It can be very challenging. And you can imagine Mary and Joseph, when they discovered that Jesus was not with them, kind of got upset. And some people might think, well, why did they miss him for a whole day's travel? But you got to understand, back then, with all the bandits and thieves out along the desert routes, that they would travel in bands. The women and children would be in the front of the group, and the men would be kind of behind, making sure everything was okay. And so it wouldn't have been unusual for them to miss him for a whole day until they camped out and started looking for him. And then when they got back to Jerusalem and they found him in the temple, he simply looked at them as like, why wouldn't you expect me to be about my father's business? Or why wouldn't you expect me to be in my father's house? And they didn't quite get what he was talking about. I mean, I'm sure they realized that he was special and he was the Messiah and those kinds of things, but they just didn't quite get what he was talking about. But you have to give Joseph and Mary credit for him being as well versed as he was. He knew the Hebrew scriptures. He knew all the writings from the early days of God and his chosen people. So Joseph apparently did a pretty good job of raising him up spiritually and religiously. We don't know much about Joseph. Actually, we don't know much about Jesus the first 12 years of his life. From the time that they escaped to Egypt to keep him from getting killed and coming back, and the Bible starts talking about him at 12 years old again. So we don't really know about those times. There are stories, humorous stories, about things that Jesus might have done as he was growing up. Things like he would make clay birds, and when his parents would get onto him, he'd breathe on them and they'd fly away. Or different things like that. Of course, it's probably all just stories, but we don't know. And they didn't make it into the Bible, so they're probably not true. But there are those things, and we wonder about those things. And considering that that family, being a special family, had challenges, it's understandable that we have challenges as a family. As being a part of our immediate family, maybe our extended family, and our church family, because we are a family of Christian people, this church. There's a young man who, at graduation, was asked to give the commencement speech. And so he gets up there, and he's got this prepared speech in front of him, and he starts out, and he says, "I want to talk about my mother and the wonderful influence she has had on my life. She is a shining example of parenthood, and I love her more than words could ever do justice." Then he kind of pauses for a minute, looks at his prepared text, and finally looks up and with a sly grin says, "Sorry, but it's kind of hard reading my mother's handwriting." Mary and Jesus were very important to each other, mom and son. So important that even on the cross, before Jesus died, he wanted to make sure mom was taken care of. If you recall, he looks down and said, "Mother, here is your son. Son, here is your mother." He wanted to make sure she was taken care of. So they were a very tight-knit family, even though there may have been some challenges. And we can imagine that a lot of the stories that were told, and this story, for example, were probably told by his brothers. So they may have been a little bit misinterpreted. But we all, as families, have challenges. Any family that tells you that they never fight, they just all get along famously, probably not telling you the truth. Families have problems. You can't always agree on everything. You're going to have disagreements. Kids are going to do things that mom and dad really don't like, and maybe mom and dad are demanding things that the kids don't really like. So families have disagreements. That's not unusual. I mean, be honest. Think about your family. You have disagreements, I'm sure. Things happen. You have conflicts. In fact, in Mark 3, there's a story about how Mary and her sons, Joseph's not mentioned, we're not sure why, but Mary and her other sons get concerned because of the stories they're hearing about Jesus. And they're real concerned and wondering about what's going on here. So they go to find him because they want to bring him home. And in Mark 3, it says that they come to the door and ask for him to come out. And he looks at the crowd around him where he's been talking to these people, and he says, "These are my brothers and sisters." And he doesn't go outside. And I'm sure that was kind of upsetting, but he was doing what he was sent here to do. And maybe they didn't quite understand that, but I'm sure eventually they did. Things that happen in families can sometimes drive families apart. There's a story of a house, one of these model homes that was designed so that each member of the family had their own door to go into. Each member of the family had their own little bedroom area and TV area and their own little kitchenette, so they didn't have to interact with each other, which is kind of silly. But we're getting to a point where you see the jokes on Facebook and little cartoons in the paper about how they don't talk to each other anymore. They can be sitting across the dining room table and they're texting each other. There's no interaction. And we need to be careful about that. We need to interact with one another. We need to have that interpersonal relationship with our families, our immediate families, and our church families. We've got to have that relationship. It's important. We need to know that there is somebody there for us. We need to know that somebody cares about us, that loves us, that wants to be sure we're okay. We all need that. And you get that from your families. That's the most important thing. Tom Bodine wrote a book called Virtual Faith. He was writing about Generation X, as it's been coined. He said, the most fundamental question young people today ask is, will you be there for me? He says, we ask parents, friends, partners, society, religions, leaders, nations, and even God, will you be there for me? All of us at any age ask this question of one another as well as God. Not just the young, not just the Generation X, but we wonder, are you going to be there for me? Children want to be sure their parents are going to be there for them. And as we grow older, we ask our children, are they going to be there for us when we get to a point where maybe we can't take care of ourselves? Everybody wants to know there is somebody there for each other, that we're watching out for one another, that there's going to be somebody there. And that was one of the conflicts with Mary and Joseph when they went to find Jesus. Because they wanted to be there for him, but didn't realize he wasn't there. And then when they went and found him, his comment was probably not received very well. But if you'll notice, the last thing Luke says is he went back with them and was obedient to them. He knew at that point, I guess, that, you know, yeah, he had this mission to do, but he also had a family that he needed to be responsible to. And that's important. There was a survey of teenagers that shows that most teenagers have a positive feeling for their parents. And I'm sure Jesus had a positive feeling for his parents. And that may be why he went ahead and went back to Nazareth with them. And Luke tells us was obedient to them. Mary scolded Jesus. But you notice that she also says she kept these things in her heart. The New Testament kind of gives us a picture of a family that is in harmony. A family that is working together. Staying together. And that's the way we should be today. That's the way families should be. We should support one another in whatever it is that we want to do. Well, you may not agree with what your child decides they want to do, but you should support them, as long as it's not just way out there. I'm sure everybody knows who Jane Goodall is. She's an expert in chimpanzees and apes. But did you know that she was born into a prominent, affluent family? Her name is actually Baroness Jane Goodall. But she decided at an early age that she needed to go to Africa, and she wanted to study the apes and the chimpanzees. In fact, when she was 2 years old, she gathered up a handful of worms and put them in bed with her because she wanted to see how they moved. And mom, instead of getting upset with her and grabbing them and throwing them out, mom was very understanding, believe it or not. She said, "Jane, if you leave those worms in your bed, they're going to die. You need to gather them up and take them out to the garden." So she was very tactfully supportive of what Jane was doing. And they supported her in her decision to go to Africa. And she spent 30 years in the African jungle with apes and chimpanzees and became the expert on those. So what your child decides to do or your grandchildren decide to do is important. It's important to them and should be important to you, because we are supposed to stick together and support each other. We should be sensitive to our children and our grandchildren's needs. You know, when you were having children or are about to have children, you know, when they're little, you can be very sensitive to that. In fact, I can remember when our girls were little, I sleep pretty sound, but I could hear their feet hit the floor in the middle of the night. And that's how sensitive you are when you're a parent. You notice those little things. You keep an ear out for your children. You're sensitive to who they are and what they need. And we should remain that way even as they grow older. We should remain sensitive to their needs. Good parenting begins with sensitivity and sharing, keeping the lines of communication open, talking to one another. You know, that's one of the biggest reasons that families break up, because they quit talking to each other. They quit communicating. Communication is important. Just as much as praying is a communication. Praying is not talking at God. Praying is talking with God. It's communication. And it should be the same way in our families, our immediate families, our extended families, or our church families. It's about communications. Someone noted that there are 940 Saturdays between the day your child is born and the time he or she turns 18. I don't know why people do these things, but somebody had too much time on their hands. But what it points out is that you have a short amount of time, believe it or not, with your children as they're growing up. And you should cherish that time. You should be there for your child always and help them to grow up wisely and with wisdom. James Patterson wrote a novel one time called Suzanne's Diary for Nicholas. Probably not one that you would think of with James Patterson. But it's a story of a busy mother named Suzanne, who's terminally ill because of a heart condition. Suzanne makes dramatic changes to structure her life in a way so that it balances work with relationships. She was actually a doctor. As expected, she dies at a young age, and eventually her husband remarries. The child's stepmother finds a diary that Suzanne had kept for him. And looking in the diary, there's a page in there where she wrote, "Imagine life is a game in which you are juggling five balls. The balls are called work, family, health, friends, and integrity. And you are trying to keep all five of those balls in the air. But one day you finally come to understand that work is a rubber ball. If you drop it, it will bounce back. The other four balls, however, family, health, friends, and integrity, are made of glass. And if you drop one of these, it will be irrevocably scuffed, nicked, or even shattered. And once you truly understand the lesson of the five balls, you will have the beginnings of balance in your life." I know it was a novel, but she wrote that to her son in this novel, and it's an important thing to think about. If you imagine life being that way, where, yet, jobs come and go, they bounce back. Families do not. Health doesn't. Friends, maybe. Integrity. Once you lose your integrity, it's gone. Proverbs tells us that. That's one of the most important things you can have is your good name. Those are breakable. So we need to think of them that way and live our lives that way. There's a pastor talking about a Sunday school class for parents, young parents. This was a new Sunday school class. They were trying to think of a name. And they thought of things like seekers and searchers and learners, you know, all the usual names for a Sunday school class. But they just didn't seem to be appropriate. They didn't fit. So finally they got this little class together, and the pastor happened to be walking by the classroom door one Sunday morning, and on the door was a sign that said, Tired Parents Class. It could be just as easily Tired Grandparents Class. And that really kind of says it all. Yes, we get tired. Yes, things happen in our families that we may not agree with. Things that may wear on us. Things that may upset us. But they are still family. And family is important. No matter what your children do, you will always love them. No matter what your children do, they are always yours, and you will do what you need to do to take care of them. That's a given. Proverbs even tells us, start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. Everybody's familiar with that quote. And it's important that we raise our families right, that we stay dedicated to our families, that we are always there for our families, and we support each other. Husband and wife, brother and sister, mom and dad and children, we should all be there to support one another. Nobody said being a parent was ever going to be easy. Nobody said being a family was going to be easy. God never promised us that life was going to be easy. All he ever promised us was there is a place with him at the end. He didn't say it was going to be easy. But despite that, we need to understand that we should stick together. Even as a church family, we should stick together. Continually be sensitive to one another's needs. And if something happens that upsets you, talk to somebody about it. Talk to the person that upset you. Don't let it fester. Don't take your ball and go home. Don't run off because somebody said something that offended you. That's too easy today. We seem to be offending everybody. We should be talking to one another. If something happens, the Bible tells us you should go to that person and talk to them. And if they won't listen to you, take that person to the church in front of two other people and talk to them. And if that doesn't work, take them in front of the church and talk to them. What the Bible's getting at, folks, is you need to talk to each other. You need to be sensitive to one another. You need to understand that if you drop that glass ball, it's going to break. So keep that ball in the air. Take care of it. Handle it gently and with love, because your family is a wonderful gift that God gave you, and you should honor that and take care of it. Amen.